Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 7. I'm Dan Tomlinson, and joining me, as always, is Rich Harrison, aka Pommy. Rich, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm very well, mate. And you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Bit of another mental rugby league weekend. I don't think we can expect anything else these days. It's the best sport on the planet.
Yeah, mate. Another weekend when too much rugby league is not enough. It was incredible, wasn't it?
Absolutely. On both sides of the globe, the NRL just goes from strength to strength. It's just a ridiculous, entertaining competition. And over in Super League, you know, from Thursday's game against Wigan, which was decent, to the absolute mental scenes at Craven Park on Friday night, right through to Hull and Warrington on Sunday. You know, a crazy round of action. And we'll start, as always, with Hull FC. The winning run comes to an end, 14-all draw against Warrington. But there's still, you know, some things to take out of the game. I thought the perfect place to start is probably the biggest improvement in Hull FC, which is the defence. And, you know, it's obviously been Brett Hodgson's buzzword since he came into the club. And the resilience that we show under him now, I'm really pleased with that. It's great to see, and long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that last try aside, which we got absolutely mugged there, didn't we? We looked really strong, didn't we? I mean, our goal line defence, again, strong. It's the manner of defence, isn't it? It's the scramble. It's the fact that the players are trusting the players on their inside and outside shoulders, that if they can't make it, there's someone else that will. Just a very compact defence, I thought. And some of the stats as well, which I'm sure you'll go through. Phenomenal stats. I mean, I know we had an extra 10 minutes, but yeah, ridiculous stats. Do you want to go through them?
I mean, some of these numbers are absolutely mental. I'll just go through the defensive ones. I mean, you've got Joe Cater, 53 tackles. Andrea Sevilla, 47, non-missed. Chris Satai, 38, non-missed. Scott Taylor, 38. Jordan Lynn, 31. Ben McNamara as a halfback, making 42. And then most incredibly of all, Danny Houghton, 85 tackles. I repeat that, 85. He didn't miss one. That's almost a tackle every minute for the course of an hour and a half action of rugby league. And this is the toughest sport in the world. And, you know, that's freakish. That's ridiculously good.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. We will always go on about tackle 52, won't we, at Wembley. And the fact that he, you know, in fact, he made, I think, 55 or 56 that day, didn't he? Because he made three or four after that as well. But, that is a ridiculous effort. That really is. And in a game that's played under, you know, pretty quiet circumstances with no crowds there and everything, there's no crowd to get your adrenaline up and everything, to do that, it's miraculous.
It really is. It's phenomenal. Obviously, it's a Super League record as well, I believe, overtaking the 72 that Morgan Smithy's got for Wigan a couple of years back. And yeah, that is nuts. I know some people will probably look at it and think, well, is that really a good thing? A player making 85 tackles, well, he's a little lad in the middle of the field. And if you're a big prop forward, if you're a loose man in the middle, whatever, and you'll see Chris Satai, Scott Taylor, Joe Cater, Jordan Lane, and then you've got Danny Houghton, you're going to run at Danny Houghton. We'll come on to the NRL later, but Brisbane Broncos, their two starting middles ran at Mitch Kenny, the Penrith Panthers hooker, all game and absolutely peppered him. And obviously, his stats were freakish as well. But yeah, to make 85 tackles in a game and not even miss one, you know, you think little lad in stature, obviously got the biggest stat on the planet, but to not actually miss one as well is absolutely freakish. And Danny Houghton, you know, people criticise areas of his game, and obviously there's a lot of hookers in Super League, Paul McShane, Darrell Clark, James Roby, that are obviously phenomenal players. But, you know, Houghton needs no introduction. He's won the Man of Steel before. He's a Hull FC legend. He's approaching the top 10 all-time appearance makers for the club. He's the glue that holds us together. The effort he puts in every week is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. I mean, you know, you're saying about the number of appearances made and stuff for the club. Generally speaking, people that make a lot of appearances for any club tend to be wingers, fullbacks, you know, occasionally halfbacks. Not usually people in the engine room making 50 tackles a match and 85 in this case. Do you know, he puts himself about. His engine is incredible. It really is. He's got to be the most underrated hooker I think I've ever seen.
I think that is fair. I mean, there was areas in attack as well where he was jumping out the ruck And, you know, really getting Warrington on the back foot. He was, you know, getting out. The markers were ominous. And there was five times where he did it. And I think he made 51 metres from the scouts that he actually did. So it's just about doing it more. I know that's probably people thinking, hang on a minute, you're asking him to do more when he's just put that effort in. But, yeah, there's always room for improvement, isn't there? But, yeah, just absolutely phenomenal. But they actually blow my mind, those stats. I know stats are everything. But when you look at those numbers... And you've got, and again, on the other side, you can flip it. Carlos making 215 again. Josh Griffin, 155. Yeah. Taylor, 135. Satai, 116. Yeah. Sevelio, 127. Cater, 118. Jordan Lane, 147. They are phenomenal numbers. Our rugby league players are incredible. And I've said to this loads of times this year, but I'm actually watching the sport at the moment, and I'm completely in awe of it because the stuff these blokes go through. And it was interesting to read Gareth Ellis's Yorkshire Post column as well, because... He said that they're not allowed to do the swimming recovery at the moment in the UK, and there's no ice baths either. And obviously, that's a huge part of their week-to-week recovery.
Yeah.
So to not have that and still put these efforts in, it's just ridiculous. Honestly, it's the best sport on the planet. It's bloody insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you compare that to the stupid money that's being pushed around by the soccer clubs that are looking to do this European Super League thing. And you know, what is it? What's that famous quote, which is, you know... soccer players spend 90 minutes on a field pretending they're hurt, and rugby league players spend 80 minutes on a field pretending they're not. You know, and when you look at it like that, I agree with what you say about Houghton. You know, there is a modern hooker's not just a tackling machine, and he needs to be, you know, sparking the attack and everything. But at the end of the day, it was his vision after Brown's dropped ball that got Lane through that hole. You know. It was him jumping out of acting half that gets us on the front foot. And, you know, 85 tackles and still being a potent attacking weapon that the opposition have got to watch out for. Mate, that's stupid. It's ridiculous.
It is. It's so good. And like I say, the defensive effort across the whole team was absolutely outstanding. And you know, we look at Hull FC, the Hull FC of the previous few years, and there's been a bit of a soft underbelly. We've rolled over when the going got tough, but there was none of that against Warrington. We really rolled our sleeves up. It was a really tight game, a proper war of attrition between two, you know, what must be said, two very good forward backs, and it was tough. You know, it was no place for the faint-hearted, and I thought, you know, Warrington probably had the better of the chances. I think that's fair to say. They looked like scoring more than Hull did, and for Hull to shut them out, and only draw the game in the last play of the original 80 minutes, which was absolutely gut-wrenching, it must be said, because, you know, to throw in that effort, score two outstanding tries and hold your line, and then to, you know, to bloody concede in the last second, I must admit, that was, you know, fair play to Jake Malmau as well, who had a, you know, he had a great game, to be fair. I really enjoyed that tussle with Josh Griffin all afternoon. It was good to watch. But from our point of view, we probably should have seen the game out, but I'm probably more in awe, to be honest, of the effort, especially the defensive effort, rather than nitpicking over what we did with the ball. You know, against Warrington, we're a good opponent. And, yeah, just great to see those defensive traits.
To be honest, Dan, isn't that a sign of how far we've come? That we draw with Warrington and we're saying it's a point lost rather than a point gained?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you know, you look at it and you're disappointed that we conceded late, and you're disappointed that Snead couldn't knock over a field goal. And he's not fit, Snead. We've rushed him back a game or two early because we've had to, you know. And you could tell he wasn't 100%. But at the end of the day, you know, you've just drawn with a team who were a lot of people's favourites to be top three. And you probably should have won. And you can feel hard done by that we didn't. So, you know, at the end of the day, mate, four games in, three league and one cup, we're still unbeaten.
That's a good start. There's no beating around the bush there.
Yeah,
absolutely, mate. Yeah, 100%. I would have bit your hand off for that.
Yeah.
Because we've also got to realise, you know, where we are as a club and what we've expected this year. And I think me and you both said a decent run in the cup and, you know, to be comfortably in that top six and win a playoff game would be a good season, obviously installing the philosophies that Brett Hodgson wants to implement at the club. You know, see improvement week by week, sort the defence out, win well, and, you know, when we don't win, we go down fighting. Well, we got that yesterday, because Hull FC never gave up fighting. You know, the effort, as I say, was really admirable. And that sort of defensive display will win games in the future. When you're committed to stand up you know, defend your line like Hull did yesterday on Sunday afternoon, and you know, you're going to win more games than you lose by a long way, and it was encouraging.
Totally. Yeah, totally. And you know, it's again, you know, I've said it before, you know, the way a team defends is a measure of their respect for their coach. And we just seem to grow an extra leg under him, don't we? He just, for some reason, Brett Hodgson's come in and he swept the broom across the thing, and he said, right, I'm not going to respect people's reputations, and if you're playing well, you're in. If you're not, you're out.
And that,
you
was
know, did he drop Fanua on form, or was Fanua injured?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Yeah, no respect to reputations. Well, Brett Framo comes in, doesn't he? And obviously, Fanua, I believe there's nothing to say that it was injury related. So it's obviously a tactical decision. He's just obviously preferred Framo to Fanua, and I like Framo. I've always liked Framo. It gets your sets rolling, which obviously in the modern day game is crucial for any winger. But he's a wrecking ball, isn't he? He's so powerful. His defensive side to his game has also improved. I think that goes hand in hand with obviously the patterns implemented by Hodgson. And you don't see him get caught out on the wing anymore. We don't seem to see any of our wingers jamming in and getting caught and getting exposed. Like I say, our scramble's good, our shape's good, everything about the defence is good. But yeah, Framo is coming. He looked good at Featherstone. He obviously got himself a try. Again, I don't think he put a foot wrong really against Warrington. He probably gave away one stupid penalty, but if that's all we've got to complain about, then that's not bad, is it?
No, exactly. Exactly. You know, that team that was picked, I mean, you look at it, right? We've drawn with a team that, like I say, a lot of people's tip for certainly the top five, if not the top three. We've drawn with them with a teenage halfback because our marquee signing was out. Without probably our in-form forward in Ligi Sow, without one of our marquee players in Manu Mau, you know, you've got a team there that is still really, really competitive, and there's three or four players out. Now, previously, when you've looked at a Hull side that's got three or four players out, you've gone, well, that's us done. That's us done for 3 or 4 weeks until we get the bodies back. But, you know, I'd back that team that he put out yesterday, that 17 that he put out yesterday. I'd back them against most teams.
Yeah, they'd be 8 or 9 sides in this comp, I reckon, quite comfortably. And that's probably dangerous territory with Wakefield coming up on Friday night.
Yeah, I know.
Hopefully, won't be any banana skins.
It'd be just like us to lose.
That would be typical. All that though, yeah. Performing against the big sides and slip up against the side you'd expect them to beat, but. Now, I think we're much more professional. There's no doubt in my mind that we'll take that game as if it is a huge game against the St. Helens or a Wigan, who obviously we've got back to back in recent weeks. But yeah, defensive side to the game, great. The fact that the mentality, the attitude, and it is a great point, because I must admit, when I did my stuff on Up the Cream website, I didn't really focus on who was missing, because I just found, I know I've watched Wigan in the three rounds of Super League, and they've had half a team out and still, win all three games pretty comfortably. So yeah, but it is pleasing, because the whole FC of last year would have lost that game, hands down. I know we're going to get a point from it, which, the ridiculous situation the table is these days with the win percentage and that ridiculous points differential thing. I don't know how the hell it works, but Hull were actually top at one point this weekend, despite Wigan and St. Helens winning 3 games and Hull 2. But yeah, Hull were top at one point. I just don't know how it works. It's mad.
I know.
But yeah.
Mate, there are Nobel Prize winning mathematicians that have got no idea how that works. You're not on your own.
That's all right then. And I'm no mathematician, believe me.
No, me neither.
But yeah, so with the ball then, obviously Hull were a little bit clunky. If you compare it to the opening two rounds where obviously it was free-flowing, you can say, yeah, that's largely due to Josh Reynolds being out. But one player who, really excelled in that game was Jordan Lane, playing in the back row.
Yeah.
Obviously played the first 3 games of the season at loose man, comes in on it. Probably what is his more favoured position, certainly his more well-known position, and he was just phenomenal. What a player he's turning into.
I would be really interested to hear him talk about the effect that having Ellis as a coach, because the lines he's running are sublime. They really are. And he's not a big bloke, but he's tackle-busting. I mean, even when he ran through for Connor's try, the Blue fullback just bounced off him. Yeah, he slowed him down, but he just bounced off him. He gave us enough time to get the offload away and for Connor scampering under the posts. He is a solid unit, and he's quick. And, mate, he's, you know, I remember, I think we've said this in a couple of weeks before, people bad-mouthing him and saying, oh, you know, he's too small. I don't see what it is about him that other people seeing him. Mate, he has been phenomenal this year. He really has. Him and Keita, two of the most underrated forwards in the league.
Absolutely, both full born as well. Obviously, one come from our academy, the other one from Rovers. Cheers, lads. Obviously, they all see the light eventually, don't they, and come to the city. He's obviously the most successful and most Premier Rugby League club. But yeah, I've watched John Lane for, you know, years and years and years. The first time I ever saw him was 2015, and he had spent the full year out with a serious knee injury. Came back in the final regular season game of the under-19s competition, and ironically it was against Warrington, and Hull needed to win it to finish third in the comp and, you know, get a, obviously, the playoff tie that they wanted.
Yeah.
And it was a brilliant game, great advocate for academy rugby. Lane came in, scored two tries, looked like he'd never been out, and it was, you know, it was phenomenal, absolutely brilliant, in a great game that all won by 2 points.
He's a class act.
He really is. And then the year after, he does his back in. I think I mentioned this before, his start to his whole career was really tough, and he had to wait a couple of years to get his debut. I think he didn't make his debut as a teenager. I think at Leeds in 2018 he was about 20, 21, so he had to bide his time a little bit. But he's come in and he's just getting better and better and better. Those lines that he runs when he breaks free and shows the speed to break away from the line, it reminds me of Liam Farrell when he first came through at Wigan.
The
resemblance is kind of uncanny. And, you know, Liam Farrell needs no introduction either. He's a phenomenal player. He's been, you know, scored 100 tries plus for Wigan as a back rower. So, you know, he can pick a line. And that's what Lane reminds me of. He's really intelligent, just picks those lines, and he's unstoppable, you know, when he gets into his groove.
And he hits in defence as well. He's solid in defence. He's never let us down. I can't think of a bad game he's played. I think sometimes, you know, if he doesn't make a clean break or whatever, you can say he's kind of solid but unspectacular. But, you know, the first four games of this season, he's been incredible. He really has. You can't, you know, he's got to be first name on the team sheet almost.
You can actually present an argument that if you take the four games as a whole, you could put a case forward that Lane has actually been Hull FC's best player. I generally believe that. Josh Reynolds, obviously outstanding for the two games before he got his hamstring injury. Jake Connor's been, you know, pretty influential to say the least. But, you know, Lane across the four games has been phenomenal. He really has. He's stepped up and took his game to the next level. And that's the thing. There's improvement on him week by week, month by month, year on year. I generally think there's more to come as well. I think the sky is the limit for this lad. His attitude is great. He's a really nice lad as well. The last Vice President's Association meeting we had before the first lockdown last year, he was the guest with one of the physio guys called Dave. And just a really nice bloke. You know, he talked to everyone, didn't mind posing for pictures. Just really well-spoken, just a really nice lad. And obviously, you know, he's West Hull born and bred. You know, he obviously supported the club as a boy. He come through our systems, embedded into our structures. And, yeah, just a great player. Great to see him do so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Long may it continue, mate, that we're still, you know, we're still producing really good, young local players. You know, we need it. You know, and I think, you know, your next couple up, you know, your Jude Ferreras and the likes, you know, we need to nurture them as well, and they need to get some first grade action this year, which I think they will. You know, like I say, with Brett Hodgson's kind of attitude that if you're not performing, you're out. You get the feeling that we're going to be it's going to be very much a squad game this year for us, rather than a, you know, best 17 and then whoever comes in for someone who's injured. He's going to play some of the younger kids in games that he thinks we can win, regardless, you know. So against a Wakefield or a Rovers or a Salford or a Lee, you know, he might put a couple of kids in just to kind of balance the squad out and give people a bit of a break.
No, I agree, because also what we've got to take into consideration is there's three double header weekends later in the season where we play either Thursday, Friday or the Sunday, Monday. So the squad is going to be, you know, extended to its full capacity there, and we have got a skinny squad, so you would expect you know, these young players to come in and you know, and get some appearances under the belt. I mean, Cam Scott's played three times already. You know, he was on the bench against Wyatt, but he didn't get on, did he?
No, he didn't get on.
Which is probably testament to how good the two centres are playing. You know, Carlos Tumavavi and Josh Griffin have been absolutely phenomenal for God knows how long now. I mean, the back rowers. I mean, we just raved about one Jordan Lane. I thought Andrea Sevelio was pretty good too. You know, what a player he is.
Jeez, he flies under the radar, doesn't he? He's outside of Hull, I don't think anyone talks about Sevelio, but he has been brilliant for us for the last season and a half, I think.
That is fair. The back end of last season, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
Started this year, picked up exactly where he left off. And it's probably no surprise, well, to me and you especially, who know how good he is, you know, to actually see him play so well when he gets, you know, continuity into his appearances.
Yeah.
I mean, horrible knee injury at Brisbane. I mean, it ruined his NRL career, didn't it? And he had a really bad knee injury.
First pre-season game he did it, and just awful. And you know, he was signed by Bennett, and Bennett had massive raps on him, you know. And he was talking about him being. He actually said he's going to be an English Paul Gallen, is what he said. And you know, he just never quite worked out for him.
But I suppose, you know, Brisbane's loss is obviously Hull's gain, and
absolutely
it was a steal. It really was a steal getting him in 2019, and that was just Lee Radford though, wasn't it? His eye for a player was, you know, phenomenal, and we're seeing that again in Chris Satai, who's, I think he's again underrated and never spoken of outside of the Hull boundary, but Jesus, he's been immense. You know, the player you singled out in the first podcast we did this year, he has been immense so far this year.
And the cool thing about Satai is him and Liggy Sow are best mates. I mean, they're inseparable best mates. And when we signed one and then the other, you know, we signed Satai and he came over right at the end of season before last, didn't he? He played like three games at the end of the season. And when we announced we'd signed Sow, I remember Satai saying at the time, you know, we're picking up a really good player. And I think the day that we announced we were signing him, he came off the bench for the Warriors and scored with his first touch. And I was like, oh, here we go. We got a baller, you know, we got one. And then he didn't do bugger all else after that. But he's a really underrated player. He played second row or even lock, you know, loose forward over here. But you know, he can play prop. You'd even say if we were desperate, you'd even put him in the centres. He's that mobile. You know, he's a bloody good player, Liggy Sow.
Yeah, he is like chicken legs, but a huge frame at the top. But
that's exactly right.
But his big mate, Chris Satai, really impressed me. It's just, you know, the little things with Satai that gets me. Like, his play of the ball is insane. He wins the four 9 times out of 10. And then when you see you've got your out ones playing on the back of that, you tip it onto the first receiver, you're on the front foot, you're going forward. It's no surprise that Hull FC's meter making ability is ridiculous. And to be honest, it has been for 4 or 5 years now. It's just, you know, getting that polished side to our attack win, and obviously in the opposition 20. And some of that wasn't crisp against Warrington, it must be said. There was a lot of forward passes. I don't think I've watched a game where there was as many forward passes. It's like watching Tom Brady in the NFL. Not that I ever watch NFL. But, yeah, that's what it was like at times. A little bit clunky, but I think that can be forgiven. Also, it must be said that, like I say, a tight game. Warrington are a good team as well. It was nip and tuck. You know, just a proper, you know, old-school battle, like I say, a war of attrition, and obviously led to the Golden Point fiasco, which was just
that's karma for me. That's karma for me and you, sir. What would you give to have a sneed in your team after watching the Golden?
Do you know what? Yeah, that's our fault, isn't it? We jinxed it.
Yeah,
but nine misses between them: Jake Connor, Max Sneed, Blake Austin, and Gareth Widdop. And to be honest, I think it was only about one or two that were even, you know, close to going over. And yeah, we really did mess up there, didn't we? Taking the piss out of Rovers last week. Come back to bite us on the back.
And then they win this week on a bloody Jordan Abdul field goal. Yeah.
Jordan Abdul with his fat left foot. That was a great game. That was absolutely mental watching that. And we talk about how good rugby league is at the moment, both the NRL and Super League. And that was a phenomenal game. Now, I'll leave it there because I hate them and I hope go into oblivion one day and never cease to exist. But, that was a great game to watch. It really was. And, just It wasn't a shame, obviously, Sneed. It's the first time he's ever let us down in that scenario, and obviously it's the first time a Super League Golden Point has failed to deliver a winner.
Yeah. He's happened a couple of times over here. But yeah, first time ever in Super League. Yeah. I don't like Golden Point, I've said it before. I don't like it. I'd rather just say it's a draw. But, you know, I can see where, you know, for advertisers and for broadcast figures and everything, and for the TV companies, it's a fantastic thing because it means that you get a result, and it ups the excitement, and it ups the column inches the next day, I suppose, for the media and everything. So I can see why. I just don't like it. I'm a bit of a purist.
I love it. So this is probably the first time we've ever disagreed, I think, this podcast. Yeah. But I absolutely love it. And I'll tell you why I love it. Because Rugby League, as we know, we absolutely love this game and we want the best for it. It is the best game on the planet. And the reason I love Golden Point is it adds excitement to the game, it adds drama to the game, but more importantly, it gets people watching the game. The most watched NRL highlight clip from this weekend was Tom Burgess' Golden Point try for South Sydney on Saturday.
I still say it bounced it.
Yeah, controversy with the try, obviously. Yeah, did he actually ground it? And obviously, if he didn't, that means West should have won because Luke Brooks picked the ball up and nonchalantly ran 100 metres to punt the ball down at the other end.
Yeah, that is ridiculous, isn't it? Because, I mean, at that point, that play, the game's finished. But which way is it finished? That's the most insane end to a game. You know, where you got a player puts the ball down, it comes out of his grasp, the opposition player takes it and runs 100 metres. Referee actually awarded the try to the Tigers first and then went to the screen to see which way it had gone. Yeah, I mean, that's just ridiculous. Absolutely insane rugby league. And mate, the entire weekend in the NRL was like that, which I'm sure we'll get onto, but it was just a stupid weekend in the NRL.
As is the beautiful base that is rugby league, it's just delivering week in, week out. But I look at Golden Point, right, and we've been blessed, haven't we, the three previous times we've had it. I mean, you touched on this last week when we was raving about Mark Sneed. Again, jinxed it, didn't we? But four kicks at Catalans. But obviously, the first ever Super League side to win in Golden Point was all when he put the drop goal over at Wigan. Yeah, in February 2019. And did the same at Wakefield last year. So, yeah, we've seen some dramatic moments in Super League. Remember Brad Dwyer's field goal for Leeds? And it was when, Dave Ferner, when he was like, no, what are you doing?
Dave Ferner went, no, Dwyer.
Yeah, not Dwyer, went, no. I just think there's a couple of F-bombs in there as well. But it sailed over. Yeah. I think it went about 12 feet high. I think that was its maximum peak, and it sailed over the bar. Yeah. So, you think of Golden Point moments, Jonathan Thurston in the NRL. Obviously, I know that's a little bit different because it was a grand final and there had to be a winner. You know, you can't have a draw unless you want to go down the replay route. But for me, it creates drama, it creates excitement, and it just gets people talking about rugby. And for me, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I get it. And it's not like we're soccer, you know. I mean, when I remember FA Cup games when I was a kid where they went to a third replay before they had penalties, before the FA went into penalties, you know, there were like three replays. You know, 88 Cup semi-final for us, 0-0 against Halifax. And then the replay was 4-3. One try scored in 160 minutes of football between two teams. You know, just ridiculous. But I've always, you know, and even going further back than that to 82 when we won the replay at Elland Road. Another 10 minutes in that, well, another 3 minutes, I reckon, in that game at Wembley, and we'd have scored easily against Widnes. They were buggered, and we came on with a wet sail. You know, so, I mean, I get it. I get that the people love it. I think there's something to be said for a team knocking seven bells out of each other for 80 minutes and then sharing the spoils.
And I do get it. Obviously, you've watched the game a lot longer than me, and it's in an era, this is no blight on your age, I'll just put that out there now, but you've seen it in an era.
Sounds like it,
doesn't it? It's not, honestly, it's not. I'm actually in envy of you that you actually got to watch the game throughout the 80s when OSC were at the top of the Rugby League world, but there was a lot more draws then than there are back now, so I probably get why people, you know, of your vintage, again, no dig, like, you know, a good old-fashioned draw.
Mate, 85 Cup campaign, when we ended up losing in the final against Wigan, we drew against Widnes in the quarterfinals or the third round or whatever it was, and we drew against Castleford in the semi-final. Had to go to replays both times. You know, so we played an extra two games in that Challenge Cup thing than anyone else did. Ridiculous.
Was that the year we played like eight games in 23 days? Something stupid like that.
Yeah, there was a year where it was absolutely ridiculous. And they played like on a Wednesday and a Friday and put out almost an entirely different squad in the two games. It was just stupid because, you know, there'd been a bad winter and, you know, we'd lost a lot of games to the weather, but then also we'd had replays in cup competitions, which meant that we'd had to skip out of league duties as well, so we had all them to catch up at the end of the season. Wigan did it as well, I think Wigan did it 95-96 when they ended up playing like 20 games in 30 days or something. It was stupid. There's a precedent for it, but, you know, so therefore I'm probably undermining my own argument that I'd prefer a replay or I'd prefer a draw, but that's just me. I'm a bit of a throwback.
Like I say, I suppose in a league game, I do get where the argument comes from, but like I say, I am totally for it, and yeah, long may moments, as I say, like Sneed at Wigan, Sneed at Catalan, Sneed at Wakefield, you know, Brad Dwyer for Leeds, Jonathan First in the NRL Grand Final, long may moments like that continue. I tell you what gripes me more than Golden Point is the other rugby league point which really doing my Sweden at the moment, and that's the new rules that have been brought into Super League. I cannot stand them. I think the strip rule is obviously in the NRL too, but like we've said it all the time we've done this podcast, the needless experimentation and tinkering with a product that is absolutely perfect. You know, why fix what's not broken? And Warrington proper tried to utilise this new strip rule, you know, getting men into the tackle, then getting a couple of blocks to fall off, and the man who had, you know, the first contact with the ball, getting him to strip it. And you're going to get to a situation where a player will be taking a carry and he'll be absolutely petrified of getting that ball stripped, that he literally took it under his jumper. You're going to lose all the promotion of the ball, all the offloads, all the second phase play, and you're going to get a chess game where it's just hit up, hit up, hit up, hit up, hit up, kick. So basically, you're going to get 8 games in the NRL, 6 games in Super League of Richard Agar-like branded rugby league.
Oh, God, heaven forbid. Do you know, you're not going to like this guy. I'm going to disagree with you again. All right? When it first came in over here, I would have totally agreed with you for the first 6-7 weeks because that's what was happening. Canberra was a team that really smashed it over here, especially Hodgson. Josh Hodgson was incredible. He was stripping 5-6 times a match. Ridiculous. But then when people got wise to it and they realised what they were doing, it's not stopped offloads. It hasn't. And it kind of calmed down a bit after about 10 weeks. And then the game's more or less back to normal. You occasionally get one. But these days, you're more likely to get one literally on a one-on-one tackle when a player just manages to jag the ball. And then just there's a thing at the moment where you see a player almost lift his legs off the floor and use his entire body weight to reef the ball out. Which is dangerous because if he lands on an opposition player's knee or something, you're going to cripple him for life. But that seems to be the way it's gone. It hasn't really stopped offloads over here. And it's been it's the same rule. It's been over here now for 2-3 seasons. I agree with you to a point in that when it first came in, it did stymie open play. But then we just seem to have kind of absorbed it into the rules. And now it's not. There's no furore over here about taking the stripping rule back. Everyone just accepts it as part of life now.
Fair enough. Well, if that's the way Super League goes and it does follow the NRL and it's not going to be a hindrance to the game, then great. But just watching that game yesterday, the amount of times it happened...
Yeah, agreed.
And it really does worry me because, like you say, I look at rugby league and it is perfect. You don't need to change it. The other thing that really wound me up is when you kick to a corner now, you've got a Mark Sneed or a Danny out, and that puts an absolute brilliant kick into touch, 5 metres from the try line. You think, right, tap and over on the, you know, the dash line, 10 metres in from field, but oh no, the team gets the option to start the set in the middle of the field now. So you know that great set you've just done as an attacking side to ping your opposition in the corner. Oh no, they can just put it in the middle of the pitch and work the way out. I mean, what a load of bollocks.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't like that. To be honest, a lot of it is just because they're trying to stop scrums and they're trying to reduce the number of scrums in a game. yeah, I mean, it's not the best. It's not a great look. I completely agree. And you're right. It doesn't reward the attacking team and the attacking kick. Totally.
It don't. It scrutinises it, and yeah, it's just it's frustrating to see and, you know, watch it unfold there. Again, the set restarts yesterday. I'm not going to pick on Robert Hicks, because how the hell do you police set restarts all the time? They're not consistent. They're never going to be.
Yeah.
I think it's an absolute nightmare for a referee. I really do. And
it's discretion in it, and it's bad discretion. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Like I say, no consistency to them at all. And yeah, really, really frustrating. There was a couple of moments that people were moaning about Hicks. There was, I think, the penalty that led to Warrington's first try when Adam Swift apparently shepherded Gareth Widdop when Jake Connor caught a hard bomb. He did change his line, it must be said, and he did run across the player. I mean, I think we're all guilty of black and white goggle syndrome now and again.
Yeah.
And the last play as well, where, I don't know if you've seen the clip on social media, but Jake Malmo tried to offload it. It was going into touch. He offloaded it just before Josh Griffin then carried the ball over the line, and it probably was the right call. It probably needed a closer inspection. Maybe a zoom in will you know, maybe present a different outcome. But I'm sort of like past the stage now where I look at referees and scrutinise everything they do, because they've got a bloody tough job. I tell you, I referee our under-11s games sometimes, and it's a bloody nightmare. Never mind refereeing Super League or the NRL.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think I've told you before. I refereed a couple of junior games when I was probably about the same age as you are now. And there's one under-12s game I refereed that I blew a penalty for feeding at the scrum. The little halfback looked at me and went, "What?" I said, "You were feeding at the scrum, you put it in the second row." I reckon that was the last feeding penalty ever blown by a rugby league referee, and I only did it because I couldn't keep up with play and I was knackered. I'm surprised I had enough breath left in my body to blow the whistle. But yeah, I mean, and you're operating, you're trying to get these decisions out under fatigue as well, you know, simple as. And it's the same in the NRL, mate. I mean, it was inconsistencies this week, left, right and centre. You know, Latrell Mitchell could have been sent off twice for Souths, who then go on and beat Tigers. Probably should have been sin-binned at least once, possibly sent off as well. And then you've got Hetherington, who nearly took, what's his name's head off, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's head off, and you know, needed to go, and went really, really quickly. You know, you look at it from a spectator's point of view. Did you see that what rugby union have brought in, where if a player gets sent off for foul play, he's gone for the game, but you can bring a substitution on 10 minutes afterwards. So you're only down in rugby union, you're only down to 14 men for that 10 minutes, and then you bring on a replacement, but the player that was that did the foul, he's gone for the match. And there's something to be said for that, but
I don't know.
The way that there is something to be said for that, but you look at the Tigers and South's game, right? Latrell Mitchell's going to be out now. They're looking at banning him for 4 weeks. Now, he was on report, and then there was another one which was contrary conduct, and then he kicked out in the tackle as well, which could have been a sending off. Now, the Tigers didn't even get a penalty for two of those. Now, the Tigers aren't going to be the beneficiaries of what the judiciary is saying afterwards. You know, he's got away with it during the game, and he's been put on report, and that's it. That's as far as it's gone. The beneficiaries of this are the next four teams that the Souths play. You know what I mean? I'm just thinking, is it easier for a referee to make a decision to send a player off if the team that he's that badly affected by it? I don't know. I don't like it, but I don't know.
I get where you're coming from, but I think if a player's done something that warrants a red card, then the referee should have the bottle to send him off. Liam Watts is probably thinking, hang on a minute, I get sent off for laying a finger on players these days, especially when he was in an old jumper jersey.
Mate, Adrian Morley getting sent off for Great Britain after 3 seconds or whatever it was.
It was right, it was the right call.
Yeah.
It was just you know, absolute moment of sheer lunacy.
But then he finishes the game as a spectacle. Although, having said that, when the Bulldogs went down to 12 men against the Cowboys this weekend, that's when they seem to spark to life.
Well, they got it back
all of a sudden,
they
look
points,
like we're
going to
win the game.
Yeah, they got it. Yeah. Like, they got back within striking distance. I look at all right. When we had those Watts red cards, the one against Castleford, he was sent off after 18, 20 minutes, maybe even 25 minutes, actually. Oh, I know Hull were winning 18-0 at the time, but they hung on and they managed to see out that game with 12 men on the field. Against Wigan, again, Watts got sent off, but Hull were right in that game, and Wigan only put daylight between the two sides in the last minute when Anthony Gelling got an interception. So, and I remember that. Like
was
it
was that was the game where McLaurin went flying into him, and he just raised his arm to protect himself and got sent off for an elbow.
Literally. And if he didn't protect himself, he would have got absolutely clobbered, and then probably would have been the other
way
around.
And also, no other player in our team would have been sent off, but because it was Watts, referee went, it's him again, he's a problem.
Exactly. And that's literally, And I look at Wigan in 2016, went to Warrington, they got a man sent off, but they still won. So it doesn't always ruin a game. Sometimes it fires an opposition up. It sort of gives that siege mentality, and I think we've seen it. I say we've seen it at Hull, we've seen Wigan do it. There's been cases in the NRL probably where someone's done it, but for me, it was nice to actually see the referee send Heverington off, because I think in the NRL they're very scared about giving red cards out. You see some foul play, and you're thinking, just send the bugger off.
And I mean, I'm not a proponent for bring back the biff and all that kind of stuff, but the spectacle of players running in and just pushing and shoving and handbags at 10 paces and everything, there is a bit of me that, I mean, every time that happens, I reckon I scream at the TV, crack him, stand on his face, I just, there's a bit of me, it kind of gets that primeval, kind of caveman in people, doesn't it? But, I hate it. I'd rather see a bit of a punch up and two players get sent to the sin bin for it than this ridiculous spectacle of everyone running in and pushing and shoving and no one daring to throw a punch. I'd rather see a punch and sin binning than no punch. I really would.
Again, probably dangerous territory. Do we get to the stage where it becomes ice hockey or a throwback to the 70s where you've got, the infamous clip, I can't remember what sort of teams it was now, but it was an old New South Wales Rugby League match.
Newtown West. Yeah.
Where, I'm getting at where the player literally picks him up and dumps him on his head, like literally head first into the ground. Jesus, that's got, Cody Pelic all over it. Alex McKinnon, hello.
Yeah. you look at Origin, when you had Tommy Radonikis died week before last, and he was famously the guy who created the cattle dog shout, and if someone shouts cattle dog, everyone just starts opening up and punching because they were sick of the Queenslanders shouting Queenslander every time they got into a scrum. And if you talk to Andrew Johns about that, if you've ever seen any of the Andrew Johns interviews, he says, he's like, oh God, don't say it now, because he found himself opposite one of the biggest players on their team and he absolutely creamed him. Next thing you know, Andrew Johns has got a broken jaw and a lip spread halfway across his face. But, as a spectator, we're still talking about it now, and this is 20 years later. Gallen in State of Origin a few years back, when he threw the first one. And, I don't know, there's, I've written blogs about head injuries and how awful it is. Now it's right that we protect players and it's a short career and all the rest of it. But I don't know, when I see players running in like that and just pushing and shoving, that there is a large part of me that just wants to see a punch thrown. Sorry.
Yeah, I suppose, each to their own. I don't want to go down that road. The game's tough enough. Not that it is in the eyes of Mr. Paul Gallen, who... What a fruitcake.
Oh, mate, the thing that he's come out and said today, and I'll have to find it because it was a tweet, but he basically came out and said, if head injuries actually do are a long-term thing, how come we haven't got ex-players walking around like gibbering wrecks? I don't believe it. I don't get it. I don't think it's right. And everyone that I've seen that's seen it has just gone, is this guy for real? Honestly, is this guy for real? But the other side of it is everyone's going, because he's fighting this week. He's got a boxing match on Wednesday night, and most people are going, God, I hope he gets his head splattered all over the place. He's not got a lot. Gallen's absolutely loved by Cronulla supporters and tolerated by New South Wales Blues supporters, but hated by everyone else. I think no one really likes the book. And I think the vast majority of people are really hoping he gets his head pummeled in on Wednesday night.
Mate, no, they're nut job claims, because the HIA stuff is probably one of the best things that rugby league has introduced.
Yeah,
and stuck absolutely. To, you know, on both sides of the globe for player welfare. And it's a massive thing. These players have got what? Well, we're living longer now, aren't we? So they've got 40, 50 years as a minimum after they finish playing. Yeah. And that's a long time, and they don't want to be, you know, head traumas and horrible concussions, waking up not knowing what day of the week it is, and you know, you go down that road with some of the illnesses and diseases that come out, you won't wish it on your worst enemy. So we've absolutely nailed it in the way we do it now, and I actually love the fact that it's down to the doctor as well. The player don't have a say in it, because like you said, you know, with these rugby league players, they'll they'll have a, you know, a leg hanging off, but they'll still want to play on.
Absolutely, mate. You know, absolutely. To persuade a rugby league player to go off, you know, when was the last time you saw a rugby league player hold his hand up and go, that's me finished? Even, like you say, even with people that have got serious injuries, they'll try and run it off. You know, they'll try and run it off. They'll try and prove to the bloke who's come running on that, no, I'm fine, I'm all right, I can carry on. It's, you know, the amount of times that when you see these head injury assessments taking place on the pitch, is there ever one that looks at the trainer and just goes, no, mate, I'm gone, I'm done? None of them. Mm. They're all trying to stay on. You know, the worst person possible to ask if they're okay to play on is the player that's just had a hit in the head, because you don't know what the hell's going on.
Exactly. And it shows the type of blokes they are, though. I mean, like I say, salt of the earth. They just, what they go through week on week is nothing short of phenomenal. It really is. Big story in the NRL, then, that's just come out before we started recording. Jackson Hastings has just signed on a 2-year deal for, obviously, your club, West Tigers.
Yeah, who's... Brooks has come out and said, oh, yeah, I'll work with him. I'm still got a 2-year deal. I'll be right. So, yeah, sure you will. I think Brooks will end up at the Cowboys, and I think he'll probably go next season. And I think Hastings and Dewey will be the halfback pairing going forward. That kind of upsets the apple cart a little bit on where Adam Reynolds is going to go from Souths, because he said he would really prefer to stay in Sydney. He doesn't really want to go to the Cowboys, because they were looking at signing Reynolds and Brooks, the Cowboys, to be their halfback pairing. So depends now on a few other clubs as to where Reynolds will end up. There are rumours that Mitch Moses is on the outer at Parramatta, because they're dragging the feet in re-signing him. That could be a straight swap, Mitch Moses to Souths and Reynolds to Parramatta.
Interesting. Obviously, Reynolds got, talking about rugby league gimmicks, Reynolds got the first 2-point field goal last weekend, didn't he?
And 2 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, Nathan Cleary getting one this weekend. Yeah, that's the good side of 1-pointers, field goals. Bit of a nervy subject right now with two Hull FC fans, but yeah, they were, you know, two solid efforts, obviously, from Reynolds and Cleary there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the 2-point field goal, I really don't, but for theatre, it's in drama, it's incredible, isn't it? And you know, like you say, the Bunnies Tigers game, Tigers were home and hosed there, and the Bunnies came back largely thanks to the 2-point field goal that that Reynolds did, because he just put them back on track, really. And you know, the way that game finished with the golden point and everything was just unbelievable. And I mean, earlier in the round as well, I mean, your Panthers got absolutely mugged by the Broncos first half, I thought, and Broncos could well have won that game. I thought you guys didn't play bad. Broncos were fantastic. I thought Tevita Pangai Jr. played the best game of rugby league I've seen of second row player in a long time. He was everywhere on that pitch on Thursday night. Absolutely unbelievable. And then when it came to the Dally M points for that game, Cleary got 3, Fisher-Harris got 2, and Payne-Haas got 1. He wasn't even in the top 3 players in the game. I thought he was incredible.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Brisbane were excellent, weren't they?
And they were brilliant, yeah.
Good fun Penrith to obviously show different ways to to actually win a game.
Yes.
Still put under the cosh, and it's always tough, you know, for a Sydney club going up there to Brisbane, and so it should be. You know, they should make that a fortress, and they got, like you've always said, right in your blogs for up the cream, that they've got the whole city of Brisbane and you know, the wider, you know, South Queensland area to pick from. So they've got a huge catchment area, and they should be strong. And that was more like the Brisbane that we should be expecting to see week in, week out. Yeah, Pangai Junior was brilliant. I actually thought the NRL bad boy Matthew Lodge was pretty decent too.
Yeah. Brilliant, yeah. Really good, really solid. And, you know, I mean, a lot of that is from them dropping Milford and just going, do you know what, we've signed these young halfbacks, let's put them in. Let's give them a go. Milford ended up playing number six for South Logan Magpies outside Albert Kelly at number seven.
I was just going to ask that.
At the weekend, and they got beaten.
I was just going to ask that, because Kelly won on his debut there, didn't he? But yeah.
Well, did you see what happened to Kelly last week?
Nope.
He got half his ear ripped off. He's had a massive. He's got a massive kind of chunk out of his right ear, and he's had to have it sewn back on. And he played this week, almost like in a pair of earmuffs, to kind of keep his ear together. Poor bugger. But yeah, they got beat in South Logan Magpies, which is the second string team in the Queensland Cup. But yeah, I thought the Broncos were very, very good against the Panthers, very good. And then the Knights and the Sharks, I mean, that screwed my tipping straight away, because I mean, everyone I know took the Sharks, despite the fact that they didn't have, you know, that the coach went through the week. I think people thought it might actually galvanise them rather than unsettle them. And Caelan Ponga, with food poisoning, throwing up on the pitch, scored two phenomenal tries and set another two up. You know, the Knights were incredible.
It's easy to see why we're in awe of this game, innit? When you get stories that, it's incredible. You just cannot play down how good this sport is. I mean, he's been out, obviously, Ponga as well. And to come back into the team, and I know he played, obviously, last week as well, but to come back in his second game and have an influence like that,
is phenomenal. Vomiting on the pitch. That's just ridiculous. I mean, you won't want to land in it.
No, definitely not.
But just ridiculous. I mean, then, you know, going through the card this week, Storm embarrassed the Roosters. They really did. And talking of embarrassment, Jesus, Manly smashing the Titans 36-0.
Who saw that coming?
Nilling the Titans. Just ridiculous. That Tommy Trbojevic, you know, and everyone's going, oh, Manly are a one-player team and everything. He slotted back into there for his first game of the season, and was sublime. They just clicked with him there. And, you know, the kid that's been playing there in his place, he's no slouch either, but there's just something about him. He's talismanic, you know. It's a bit like Lee Breeze used to be for Warrington, or, you know, arguably Snead is for us, really. He's just, when he plays, they're a different team. And 36-0 against the Titans team that I think most people would have tipped to beat. The Sea Eagles. And then, like I said, the madness of the Bunnies and the Tigers. Then the Eels smashing the Raiders, and the Raiders being awful at home, you know, full house in Canberra, getting embarrassed by the Eels. Then the Warriors beating the Dragons, which was unbelievable because the Dragons have been on fire all year. And then the madness in North Queensland with the Cowboys and the Bulldogs and the sending off. I mean, what a round of football. You had everything.
Incredible. as it is, you know, week in, week out. And there's starting to be a little bit, we touched on it last week, but the gulf in the NRL was much closer this week. And there is a top v bottom thing, as there is in any league in the world. And I think to get every team on the same level is probably bordered on cloud cuckoo land. But, you know, like you say, Brisbane, you know, in the bottom four, putting up a fight against the, you know, Penrith.
Could have beat the Panthers.
Exactly. Yeah. Could, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't say should, but could, definitely. You know, it took a big play from, obviously, Jerome Luai, who really is absolutely sensational. All right, talking about Penrith, how dare they get a group of blokes together that have come through their systems and actually enjoy playing rugby league together? How dare they? They're just cocky, arrogant gits, aren't they?
I know. Well, you know that the Canberra trainer got a $10,000 fine for getting involved, and all he was doing was standing there, and everything happened around him, and he got a $10,000 fine for getting involved in it because he's not a player and he shouldn't have been on the pitch. The poor bugger, he got dragged into it the week before last. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, but you're
right, and I mean, to your point there, you know, Tigers easily a bottom four side, if not, you know, definitely a bottom eight side, if not a bottom four side. should have beat the Bunnies, who were a top four side. Titans, who were a top eight side, got trounced by the Seagulls, who were a bottom eight side. You know, the Eels and the Raiders, two top eight sides, and, you know, the Raiders were embarrassed. Yeah, absolutely. It was a good round and a really competitive round. You know, we had a couple of blowouts, but there were blowouts that you weren't expecting. The blowouts you were expecting were Panthers to put 50 points past the Broncos, and it never happened. Or, you know, the Bunnies to put 60 points past the Tigers, which I was expecting, but that never happened.
Well, you got to love the unexpected, don't you? And obviously, yeah. Long may that continue. So, podcast feature, Hull SC connections with the NRL clubs. Must admit, we've got a bit lazy this week, haven't we? And we've gone for Gold Coast Titans introduced to the...
Because they've only been in existence for 15 years.
Exactly. 2007 they came in. And
yeah.
We basically had a quick two-minute conversation before we started this and we came up with four players. And ironically, they all came within a 2-3 year period. In fact, three came to Hull in 1 year, one went to Rovers, then obviously came to the City's Premier Rugby League club 2 years later and won the Challenge Cup. Must be said.
And we've already mentioned him.
Yeah, so obviously you've got Steve Michaels, Jordan Rankin, the youngest ever player to play in the NRL, Mark Minicello, and the one and only Albert Kelly.
Yeah, they're the four. And I remember when we signed them, and I was a bit of a naysayer when we signed Minicello, because I was just like, oh, what, really? Another bloody, you know, second grower, do we need him? Mate, was I wrong, and happy to be wrong as well. He was phenomenal for us, absolutely phenomenal. Rankin never let us down. Played in a multitude of positions, absolutely never let us down. He was great for us. You know, you can, the enigma that is Albert Kelly, what can you say? You know, mercurial, incredible, sublime, and then, you know, goes out on the town and has a go at a chick while he's buying nuggets. You know, you just, there's a couple of things you can say for and a couple of things you can say against, but I think we got the best out of him in his career in England, and I think he'll look back on his career in England with particular pride that we won at Wembley with him at six. I think absolutely he was one of the best overseas buys we've ever had. I think he could turn a game on its head just with a moment, which you can't say that about many players. And Stevie Michaels, folk hero. What can you say about Steve Michaels?
Stevie Michaels is having a party.
carried on playing for Hull and never went home at Christmas because he knew if he went home at Christmas he'd get arrested. That's ridiculous. So, you know, and literally, when he finished at Hull, flew back and was arrested at the airport. Did you know that?
Made the news back here.
Jeez, you know. What can you say?
Cool hero, though. Well, in a black and white shirt.
Cool hero, yeah, absolutely.
Solid, wasn't he? He was, you know, good under the hard bomb. Ran the ball like water on rock. He was, like you say, brilliant player for three seasons. No,
absolutely, man. You know, and another hero 2016 at Wembley.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, big part of that, obviously, Wembley win, partnering up with Mahir Fanua. Minicello, you know, speaks for itself, doesn't it? Like you say, he was phenomenal. Albert Kelly was absolutely ridiculous. And the novelty factor as well, the fact that he came from Rovers on a free, you know, this is all said, he's a loose cannon, ticking time bomb, he's going to blow up and you'll regret it. Well, I tell you what, maybe a 2-minute video clip in McDonald's in the centre of Hull aside. What a bloody player he was. He's the type of player that puts bums on seats. Simple as that. That's who you come to watch. Like you say, he takes the game by the scruff of the neck. A line break, a brilliant pass, a kick. He just had it all, didn't he? He was a box of tricks. Brilliant player.
Absolutely, mate. He's just a maverick, you know, and you need that, don't you? You need that little bit of X factor sometimes. I mean, we're looking at Gold Coast players as well. I mean, we were close to getting Scott Prince. Very close. From what I've been told, he'd more or less signed pre-contract terms and was looking at houses and stuff when it fell apart at the last minute. And look, to be honest, the way that we went, the direction that we went without getting him was probably right anyway. So I'm kind of glad we didn't. I like Scott Prince. I know Scott a little bit from working at Balmain Leagues Club, and he's a good bloke, but I'm kind of glad we didn't. And then, now we're talking about Gold Coast Titans. We're not talking about the Gold Coast Seagulls, are we? Because I found a few of them as well. Craig Coleman.
Ah.
Craig Coleman had a season with the Gold Coast Seagulls. Obviously came over 88 with that first squad that Brian Smith assembled. Was incredible that first season. I mean, went home at Christmas, I think, and never played for us again. But was very, very instrumental in that early season, the early season form that we had. If you're also looking at South Queensland Crushers, who were the Super League side that played on the Gold Coast when we had the Super League War, we've got the late lamented Philly Saru.
I remember when he came, people said, "Oh yeah, don't worry about Tevita Vaikkonen leaving. Philly Saru's even better." Yeah, oh, all right then,
the
mate.
Philly Saru's the man. Yeah, sure he is. And I think there might have been another couple as well, but I'm drawing a blank on Google. But yeah, Philly Saru was definitely one. And I'm not sure, but I think David Bilden as well. It was a player that we got right at the kind of 98, I think, David Bilden. Gold Coast Seagulls, he played for Dave Bilden. Because I remember there was a Meet the Players thing. Shane Richardson was introducing the players. And it was just when all the Gateshead team had kind of come down, and we still had the remnants of that last Hull Sharks squad as well. And we had a big squad that year. We'd got dispensation to run a big squad. And they were trying to kind of work out which of the old Sharks players were going to stick around and which of the Sharks players could go and which of the Gateshead players were going to stick around. And Shane Richardson introduced him as, this is David Bilden. He used to play for Adelaide Rams, who no longer exist. And then he used to play for the South Queensland Crushers, who no longer exist. And now he played a season for someone else who no longer exists. And he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the future of your club is safe in the hands of David Bilden." Yeah, there was a few of those. But yeah, when you look at it like that, we've actually taken players from all over the bloody place. You know, I think we've had a few players. If we're going to get down to it, I think we might have even had a couple of players that played for the Hunter Mariners. And maybe even a couple of players that played for the Adelaide Rams, even. And I don't think we had a Perth Western Red, but yeah.
Yeah, that'll be something to dive into in the coming weeks.
When we get to it. Yeah,
when we get to it. Finish on a story that broke just before the Hull Warrington game, and that was that the new Fijian Flyer, the trialist winger, Mitali Vulikijapani. Have I nailed that? I don't know.
I think that's pretty close.
Yeah. Mitali Vulikijapani. I hope I've got that right. I've literally wrote it down and put the letters in little two.
Oh, mate, after this weekend with the NRL, and now we've got to call Nick Kotrick, we've got to call him Chotrich, apparently. I think we're just starting to take the piss now.
Yeah, absolutely. I really do. Yeah, I think you nailed it with Chans Nicol Klushta. Yeah,
Klushta. Whatever you say, I'm just taking the piss now, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, obviously, Mitch. We'll go with Mitch now. Signing on a 1-year deal adds a bit more strength and depth to the black and whites. It's another option should we need it.
Absolutely, and you know, I mean, we were talking earlier about Sneed's drop goals and that first one at Wigan. That was Ratu Naloga's first ever game of rugby league, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and I think I wrote in a blog not so long after saying, you know, how ridiculous is this that we've got a fourth string winger is scoring tries for fun and looks like the best player that we've got, you know, and you know, it might be the same. I mean, from what I've seen of him, he's quick, and he's like every Fijian back, is that he loves throwing himself into the tackle, and he loves really hurting in the tackle as well. So you know. You never know, mate. We could have got another diamond. He could be another piece of coal. He could be a, you know. Let's hope he's not a Hutch Mayava, and let's hope he's a Ratu Naloga.
Absolutely, yeah. One thing I will say is that I talked to a couple of people at the club about this, and he is taking to the technical side of rugby league really well, and he actually said better than what Ratto did 2 years ago. So if that's any indication, then probably expect a couple of fireworks.
That's what you want. And mate, if nothing else, it's going to put pressure on the first grade wingers. You know, they need to perform or they're gone. They're out.
Exactly,
and strength in depth is not a bad thing.
No, exactly. It'll keep everyone on the toes, won't it, as well. And you know, we've already seen it this weekend. Obviously, Fanua coming out and Freemo coming in. That, you know, if there's a player that's probably, you know, in form better than what you are playing right now, then you'll find yourself, you know, on the sideline watching from afar, and that's how it's got to be.
Yeah, and look, the classic case of that is Swift, mate. You know, he could really have taken his ball home after what happened last year. You know, injury, and you know, we signed Fanua just after we signed him, and it looked for a while like he was a little bit, you know, surplus to requirements. He could really have decided, oh, screw this, I'm not interested. But he stayed, he's fought for his place, and he looks like he's really you know, he's a buoyant bloke around the club, and his attitude's first class. And he always seems to have a smile on his face, and he seems to be the life and soul of the party in that time. You know, what can you say? That's a great attitude to have. And if you've got a player like that bubbling under, then yeah, Farimo and Fanua are going to be looking over the shoulders. And then if you add another one to the mix with Vuliki Japani, well then, what can you say? Long may it continue.
Absolutely, and it just shows the structures, the shapes, the philosophies, the impetuses implemented by Brett Hodgson are obviously working, and like I say, good start to the season, long way to continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go, mate, Gary Devorty played for the Gold Coast Chargers.
Ah, there we go. What a player he was, wasn't he? Brilliant. Well, thanks for your time, mate, and all the best.
Anytime.